All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. I am your host, your nickname-less host, Bryce. We're talking before the show that I need a nickname because I'm joined by Pizza Mind, who's got a whole character of himself. We've got TiVo, who's our producer here. Say what's up, TiVo.
Oh, hey, what's up, guys? My first podcast voice. How we doing?
You first introduction
to the pod. and we're also joined today by Gunny. Gunny, a.k.a. Dan Gunsberg, who's the co-founder and CEO of Hero, which is an awesome on-chain options trading platform along with many other things. So Dan, welcome to the show. Dan, a.k.a. Gunny.
Yeah, thanks for having me on and glad we can finally do this. I think we may have had one or two reschedules on it, but no better time than the present. Hey, so.
No better time than the present.
Actually, like
period.
Literally any time very is better
chaotic.
Than the present. For
all that, actually, that is a we're going great point.
But finally, we've all like, given up on like trying to like right support everything. It's like, oh, fuck it. All right, let's just do a podcast.
Yeah, no, it's been a hell of a week, man. And from your perspective, let's just jump into it. Instead of getting your background, you've got a trading background, you've built companies in the past, all that kind of stuff. Let's just kind of dive into the moment. FTX just collapsed. Nobody saw this coming. Hero was pretty affiliated with FTX in a sense. Let's talk about the affiliation and kind of what was going on from your perspective.
Yeah, sure. So I'll address the affiliation part first. So the foundation and the DeFi derivatives protocol project, you know, that we've been working on for the better part of a year now, that is was completely disassociated with. It had nothing to do with FTX. Alameda had a small, you know, small participation in the strategic round, and it was more because we, in that round, there was, you know, a lot of market makers and professional trading firms. And obviously, you know, prior to a couple of weeks ago, people thought the world of these firms and, you know, who would know. So they just had a small, you know, small stake, small position in the token market with it. And the platform that was the genesis of Hero, which started out as Hero.io, you know, which is the one that has the parimutuel markets and the TIX and WIX options. So when we did the TIX and WIX options markets, which we started in late 2020, we, you know, at the time, FTX was really on the rise. We had known the guys really since like 2019. And we were kind of thinking strategically, like, okay, if we do this on our own, and it's successful, we're going to end up competing with the likes of FTX or, you know, some of the bigger established exchanges. So maybe it's a smarter move to work collaboratively early and form a partnership that these guys are kind of beginning to go parabolic. And it made a ton of business sense for us because we were obviously much smaller at the time. And so we approached them and ended up doing a partnership where effectively we built some bridging technology between where if you were an FTX account holder that you could quickly move your funds over to Hero.trade and then participate in these TIX WIX markets, of which Alameda was also the primary market maker too. So, or the primary liquidity provider. And that was all done like on an RFQ model. And that's how the relationship, you know, existed. So when all of this, you know, kind of went down, fortunately, about 3 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks prior, we actually had our user base take their funds off of FTX. So in for no other reason than it was coincidence that we were doing a maintenance. That platform, which was formerly known as Hero.trade, is being relaunched at the beginning of December as a new, under a new full rebrand. Like because we want to separate out. It's a lot of confusion, obviously, between the DeFi project being Hero Network and then Hero.trade, and which you know, initially we thought, well, hey, they should all kind of share because eventually Hero.Trade will become an app on top of it. But I don't think that was the best move from a marketing perspective for us in hindsight, but they are completely disassociated entities and projects. So yeah, so that is being renamed. I don't want to give the name away yet, but it's going to be rolled out in the next week. There's going to be like a kind of a brand reveal and, you know, some build up to it, which will be exciting. And so fortunately we had, you know, most of the users took their funds off, not everybody, but most of them. And so it kind of stayed out of harm's way there. That platform ended up having some funds of its own, you know, treasury funds on it, on FTX. Mm-hmm. You know, it had some FTT and some, you know, some cash, and it's been owed, you know, it was owed some receivables and stuff like that. So got a little dinged up in that way. But so that was really aggravating. And I can just tell you, just from somebody that, you know, had a business relationship with them, this felt like the Madoff moment for crypto. And it extremely surreal and painful to deal with.
A sucker punch to the gonads.
Oh my God. Will. Like beyond, like sucker punch with a curb stomp and, you know, everything else. And it really, you know, I mean, I've been in financial markets for 28 years and I was on the floor of the board. You guys know my background by now, Board of Trade. And
yeah,
I've dealt with the dregs of the earth and dealt with people with very high moral standards on the other side. And like, you just, this, it felt like this was the last group. Like, you knew they ran wild and ran loose, but like, I think the industry and everybody around it kind of took it as like, well, this is just kind of what the new world is. And it is this like super fast moving break shit type of world. And the validation that they got from investors and the rounds that they were doing and how quick checks were being written and everything, it like, I think it put everybody's guard down, including, you know, many ways, including ours. And, you know, it's been really tough. It's brought up a lot of emotions that I didn't ever expect I would have about them. And, you know, now we're just working through making sure that, you know, fortunately, like our customer segregated funds were completely separate from there. And there was a very small amount of customers that had some what I would say is immaterial amounts of kind of dust, like people that just didn't move their funds off of there when we sent emails back in October to do it. And, you know, so we're just making those guys whole. It's a tiny amount of money and moving on. And the last thing that I'll say on this is it's super ironic that, well, I'll say two things. One is fortunately the foundation did not, you know, because it was not tied with FTX at all, or Alameda for that matter, didn't, you know, it had some very small amount of funds that were with a small market maker, that were on FTX.com. And so those obviously are now stuck in the bankruptcy and, but it was immaterial in terms of the runway for foundation. And so fortunately, like that project is just moving as if nothing happened, moving forward. And so that, and then secondly, is what's crazy is I was in Lisbon and I gave a keynote speech on the case for on-chain derivatives at Solana Breakpoint. I gave a keynote speech and the first 7 minutes of it, like the main thread and the main argument was that in traditional finance and in centralized finance, there exists a complete lack of transparency. Like everything today still operates in a black hole. And, you know, I think ultimately this whole event is not about crypto so much as it is about just dealing with the same bullshit that exists in the traditional space that we're supposed to be solving. And I think we've gotten away from those principles and it's time that the industry really gets back to them.
Yeah, I would have to say if anyone's building something that isn't trustless, like you're kind of missing the point of crypto. And one guy who did not operate in a trustless environment doesn't represent crypto either. So
even though
it is extremely painful right now, it's better to have this flushed out now. Like Bryce and I have been talking about this for, you know, several days. At least it happens now when they're, you know, a $40 billion company as opposed to a $4 trillion company.
Yes.
Which very, very well could have happened if mm-hmm. FTX Ventures had been able to reach the point of maturity with all the different things they've invested in.
They were trying to become like a Goldman Sachs meets New York Stock Exchange meets
and they CME. Would have.
Sam Bankman said he was going to buy Goldman Sachs. He literally floated that at one of these conferences. He's like, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we bought Goldman. And I'm like, dude, that's insane. And from my vantage point, I'm like, was he just a serial scammer? Was he truly, were they truly the smartest people in the room? Like, how did they fool everybody? Like, I have so many questions about like them as characters, and they're still out. Like, you know, none of them are arrested. I mean, they're still out there, and there's billions of dollars missing.
I can't.
The misrepresentations they must have been
I can't
making.
Tell. My first thought was Alameda must have gotten rinsed around Terra Luna.
Right.
I think that's where a lot of the cancer cells started to exponentially metastasize. Yeah. Or was it in the cards all along? And
there's a lot of rumors that Alameda caused the Terra Luna collapse.
Yeah, I have a hard time buying into rumors, which also when this happened, my first thing was like, there's so much FUD, there's so much BS, there's so much flexing going on in this space. It's a bear market. Everybody's salty. I've been through, a few of these now. This is just another thing that's getting blown out of proportion, and
one of the things that like I think about, like for instance, with a platform like Hero, where it's a decentralized derivatives exchange, meaning you know users typically interact with the platform and they own their own keys, they own their own crypto, and you can never have this sort of like, you know, custodian that's rehypothecating user funds in a decentralized way. And so this really does like make the case for Hero and DeFi more broadly. Would you say that's fair?
100%. It emboldens the case so much more. And, you know, a couple of the big trading firms that we're partners with, like when this was all happening, obviously I was getting on the phone with everybody as fast as I could, that everybody's attitude was, look, the silver lining in this is, it just emboldens the case for DeFi. This is why we're here. Like we didn't come here. They didn't come to crypto to get involved with another centralized exchange. Like, you know, if you're jump trading or you're Susquehanna, you're some, you know, CT, some big firm, you're already dealing with these well-entrenched incumbents. They're here and they're making allocations to the space to be basically a part of this experiment. Like, can we create this new alternative lane for DeFi within the context of the derivative space, within the spot, you know, within the spot world, just across the board. And they're not here to just basically trade and make markets on another centralized exchange. It's kind of what's happened, unfortunately. And so I think it's been a real wake-up call for everybody to kind of get back to the principles of why we're here. It does embolden the case for why we're building on-chain derivatives with Hero, and it does embolden the case for why DeFi needs to exist. And I think without this happening, you know, you still had other things to deal with that were part of just the way things work. It's, you know, it did have this free market aspect to it that, okay, like you tested out, I always thought algo stablecoins were just like time bombs to begin with. But when they blew up, at least they blew up in a kind of a free market way, and you had some bad actors that were doing bad things with it. But maybe we have to ask ourselves, like, and I'm not 100% not supporting this. It makes me sick. Like the whole thing with Terra Luna is disgusting and Three Arrows and everything, but maybe this is what a free market is. And you do have to go through these like boom periods and these bust periods, and you know, what's that meme, fuck around and find out, you know, like where do things fall in the fuck around and find out spectrum. And maybe this is part of it. And the reason that some of the reward exists in the space and like the volatility is here and the upside is there is because of the risk that you take as a, you know, as a lab rat in this, sometimes petri dish. And
I mean, risk and reward are two different sides of the same exact coin, right?
Right.
You can't but out have of one it, without the other.
Right. But out of it comes innovation. Mm. It's shrouded in bad things and people taking advantage of it and scams and all this other stuff, which is awful. But
yeah,
like when you peel back the layers of that, there's some really cool stuff that you can take away and figure out how that can apply and merge with elements that exist in the centralized world and, you know, try to make those solves in a decentralized, disintermediated, and dispersed way.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, someone who really, really understands trading and market making like yourself, I've got a crazy theory that I just want to throw out there. And I want you to tell me the likelihood of, you know, one being, you know, I should fire myself from the show, and 10 being like, I should, you know, give myself my own show. We're trying to figure out, how did Alameda lose? Because they've got no liquidation point on FTX. They've got all the data, so much more than the people they're trading against. Was it just, you know, gross mismanagement where there's nobody at the desk? Or were they just receiving a ton of toxic flow? Maybe from a couple participants that had the exact same data, because it was them just personally trading Sam Tribuco and Sam Bankman-Fried versus Alameda and laundering money, technically illegally, through this market maker system until the market maker had nothing left and the people on the other side of the trade were billionaires. What's the likelihood of Jesus. That scenario being the truth?
Go ahead, Bryce. Sorry. Were you going to say something?
I was just going to say, it's crazy that the Democrats also ended up with so many donations from these characters.
Yeah, and maybe ultimately from our money, you know, from people's money, yeah, from client funds.
Exactly.
And they weren't the only ones. There were Republican donations too, but just orders of magnitude less. So they're playing both sides.
Yeah. Okay. I do not want to be in the business of speculating, first of all. I don't, you know, I am a believer in, you know, innocent until proven guilty. but
likewise.
Yeah. And, but if I had to price a probability or like a binary on it, what on your theory, I would say it probably has gone bid. You know, it's probably greater than like a teeny option at this point. Mm-hmm. It's definitely plausible that something like that could have happened, especially, you know, it without knowing what level of control, like did they have a separate risk department that who was, you know, under a separate key fob that was whose job it was to be this independent risk team, making sure that even, and I don't even mean between the Chinese wall or lack thereof between Alameda and FTX, but just within Alameda, like good practices in a proprietary trading firm of that size.
Yeah.
You would have a risk department that was literally like on a separate floor from the traders, mm-hmm. from the trading floor, that was under a separate key fob that had pretty much their own systems and whose job it was to protect the firm at all costs. Like, they definitely didn't have that. And you'd think like for the size and scope that they were, that they would have something like that. But,
and all their investors that would, you know, you would think that this guy, Sam Bankman-Fried, would have so many mentors who said, dude, you got to get a board of directors for your $32 billion exchange. You got to get a board, dude.
Yeah.
And the, everybody who threw money in behind him is just as guilty, right? Because they said like, hey, we're going to give you all this money without a board, without oversight, without all these glaring red flags. People got so caught up in the cult.
I mean, people are writing
Silicon Valley made them out to be.
Yeah. Like, I think with those, like, once they got outside of just the crypto context, like crypto, it's just, it's always been this thing where, you know, when you're in a bull market, people are like, especially in a zero interest rate environment, like, we're just,
we lose our minds. Raining.
Everybody loses their minds. And like, there's just too much cash to go around and they're just like writing checks. Like, I mean, when we did our first deal with Sam, it was like, we got on a call. And we talked for an hour and he thought about what he wanted to do. And he then just said, okay, well, I want to do this much, but it's going to probably eat up too much of your token supply. So, you know, what if we do this much? And I was like, okay. And then he's like, okay, send me an address. And it was like, click.
Wow.
Had the money. Like, that's what was going on. And it was interesting at the time, because when you think about it, it was like, well, okay, maybe this is like a new way to do business, like less friction. It just makes a lot more sense. And it was pretty shocking to us. And, but on the other side, we thought, like, well, there's real game theory there. Like, this is a small industry. And if one person fucks the other one, like, there's going to be like, you're basically going to get blacklisted. And so maybe that's the way that things should work. And like, part of that was part of that, I think, perpetuated. Like, if I was thinking that, I'm sure a million others were thinking that. And it did kick off this wildfire of like, people, you know, if you weren't doing a deal and had a check written by the time you walked out of the first meeting, like, you were slow and you were behind the curve. And I think all of that perpetuated this. And then the only other thing that I'm going to say, kind of, you know, back to the point of like, what was going on within Alameda, like, number one, like, none of us know, like, hopefully it'll come out eventually. But when I think about how fast this thing went parabolic, and then, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, it wasn't like up, you know, like, usually there's that trading thing, like the trading metaphor of like, you know, floats up like a bird and then shits like a elephant. And this, like, this went up like a missile. And then like, and
down like one too.
And then down like, down like a missile. Yes. With actually the missile still had rocket fuel in it and was like going at Mach 17 when it was hitting the ocean. And like,
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The like, how could you grow that big and expect like your operations to even remotely keep up? And like, at so some foolish. Point, yeah, at some point between the beginning and, you know, and when like it really started to hit that inflection point, you would think they would have just said like, let's invest in middle and back office. Like, let's get like SaaS compliant. Let's like, do a, right. You know, like, let's become middle and back off. Like, if we're really going to become Goldman Sachs, like, we should act like Goldman Sachs. And it's not like they were a little startup that didn't have the funds to do it. No. Which, that's the thing that brings in question. It's like, if I get it, if you're a startup and you had like, you know, you got 18 to 24 months of burn left, like, you're not investing.
Yeah, put it all on black. So, go for it.
That's what, right. Which is, as a startup, sometimes that's, you know, what they encourage you to do.
Yeah.
So
he was stringing along pension funds. He was stringing along the Singaporean sovereign wealth fund. Tomasic, this is another level.
Unbelievable. The thing that is so hard. Like,
they're going to make a movie about this for sure.
Oh, well, you know, Michael Lewis was following him for the last 6 months, right?
Yeah. I know he was trying to write a book about him.
He was, and then he...
Is that ending's going to change?
Yeah. Well, I think he got his ending, right? He probably didn't have yeah. one. This was like, this is what perpetuated it. So apparently, Michael Lewis was there, and then Ben Mizrak was apparently in the Bahamas for the last couple months too.
He was the very first podcast guest that we interviewed when we took over Crypto 101.
Believe it or not,
when he was writing Bitcoin Billionaires over the Winklevoss twins. Everybody should check that out.
That had to been pretty fascinating, huh?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
So I mean, this is the closest to the sun that I've ever been on something like this. And like, thankfully it's still considerably arm's length, and, you know, and like we got as bamboozled as everybody, and it's, it hurts. And it, you know, and like I said, I mean, almost 30 years in trading, and, you know, I've been crypto technically since 2015. Like it's just, mind-boggling.
This is as bad as it gets, as big as it gets.
We can get through
it's
this.
Definitely not a high five moment, but you know, you survived. You did what you had to do before all this happened to survive. And you know, for that, you know, there is like some congratulations in order. It's more a somber hug than a high five. But because you knew what you were doing, you weren't all in one place or one company or anything.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, the real question now is, you know, what happens to Solana long term? Because they kind of were. I wouldn't want to say all FTX. You know, I also was at Solana Breakpoint, and I was very pleased to see there was a lot more than just FTX there. There's the Rockaway guys and several others that, you know, really, really believe in this tech long term that are building on here. Do you think Solana is going to be just fine in the long term, or are you guys considering jumping chains? Like, where is the state of Solana now?
That's a great question. And I probably get that question more than I get Hero, because people hear, okay, you know, Hero's got, still has its two plus years of runway and everything's fine there. I can say that a few days ago, I was worried that Solana was like, obviously CZ, you know, made his move on Sam, and then you started to, and very Machiavellian, right? It was like, it wasn't like, hey, we're gonna just try to like knock a leg out. This was like, you're gonna do this and you're gonna incinerate the village while you're at it.
And then didn't he also delist Solana stablecoins from Binance?
They did for a minute. I'm not sure, but I think it's back up. I don't deal with Binance directly, so. And then Bybit, I know, you know, and then OKX, and it was, you know, felt like a proxy war a little bit, to be honest, but they ended up taking those down, and I was like, oh man, like now they're going to make a move. And if they're a validator, like, are they going to try to do some like majority, you know, 66% attack on the Solana blockchain? And I don't think any of that is happening right now, but, we're staying very cautious. The community is still building. It's not like I haven't seen people jumping ship on it. And I think it's just going to be time. Like I am remaining very positive on Solana because, and to answer the question, like we are not looking to move at all right now. I do think, you know, crypto is going to end up in a multi-chain world, and you know, with things like Wormhole and Layer Zero and bridges like that, as they become hardened, you're gonna just see the I think this next chapter is gonna see the obfuscation of the plumbing more. And we've always thought about Hero, like the real power of the network is really in its risk engine, and with the ability to quickly move cross chain, you still do need an extremely fast blockchain to work on, to build on top of. And Solana is still the far and away the number one choice to facilitate that in our view. And then on top of that, I'm sure you guys saw the Fire Dancer presentation.
Heard about it.
Bowers came. Yeah. You know, and that's, it's teams like that are entrenched in the Solana ecosystem that continue to give me confidence that it is going to evolve to what it needs to be in terms of hardening itself and you know, can they get to a million, like a million TPS is insane. It's they're like, are they really going to be able to unlock a blockchain that can like start approaching, you know, maybe not the speed of light like they are in the traditional space, but but getting down into real low latency in terms of messaging. And I do think it's going to happen. And I think that you probably have the number one team on the planet working on that right now. And that, and they're in the Solana, and they're in Solana. And so, you know, if everybody, if teams like that were jumping ship and saying like, hey, we're out of here, maybe my attitude changes a little bit. But, you know, teams like that, teams like ours that, you know, that come from largely from a traditional space and have really deep domain expertise in what we're doing, like kind of, you know, people that really have their game face. They didn't come here to try to come up with a, you know, a quick strategy to make money and leave. Like, we just trying to build something real substantive because we've dealt with the friction points in the traditional space and are trying to unlock those or create an alternative solution.
Yeah, and very ethos driven.
Very much. Yeah, very much.
And fundamentally, like, so the fundamentals of Solana still look strong. And this is kind of like, you know, a silver lining of the massive gray clouds. But the I'd imagine there's a bunch of supply that just got locked up in FTX. I know Multicoin, there's like a huge supply shock, right? With all these funds basically losing access to their coins. And so if there's not a lot of access to coins, there's not a lot of coins to put up on offer and sell, might be good for price. For the next few years,
there's definitely a lot that's locked up. And, you know, I think these beginning of these proceedings will move relatively quickly. And then when you kind of get to the seventh inning of it, it will be very long tailed. And you're probably looking at, you know, if I had to put a market on it, I would say like highest probability is like the mean is probably 5 years.
Yeah. There was another team I met over there that they're building a layer two on top of Solana, not for throughput, but for quickness. So you can have on-chain order books and market makers and all this stuff that's needed in DeFi just to be so much quicker. And with something like that coming to Solana, I haven't really seen anything else that could compete with it. Like maybe inject a protocol over in Cosmos, but, you know, wait until they go head-to-head. We'll see which one is actually able to function. But that's really, really exciting and a very necessary part of what you guys need to be successful. So yeah, why go anywhere?
It doesn't make sense, and we're there, and it doesn't have any, like, token price does not matter to us there. Like, it just doesn't matter in general. Like, the, you know, it's the tech's there, the user base grows. If it's the right solution, technically, everything else takes care of itself in that way. And I think that's been our attitude since day one. You know, otherwise we would have thought differently about how we lock up our tokens or our economics and things like that. And we've been really committed to trying to build something impactful and sustainable for the long term. And it's, you know, it's painful at times because you go through big bull markets and you see people that are, you know, building some interesting stuff, but then sometimes a lot of vapor that, you know, somehow captures mind share and community because number go up and then those guys, you know, basically cash out on their on their community, which is not a, I don't think, a good way to be doing business for the long term. And so we just are really committed, and I hate saying in it for the tech, but we, you know, again, like back to that keynote that I gave and back to the basis of everything that we're dealing with now, like I'd like my legacy to be more tied to the fact that we were at the very early or pioneering stages of finding a solution to bring things that for centuries have existed in a opaque black box and bring them out. So there is a good level of public accountability without the need for a, you know, a central party to decide what is and what is invalid.
Yeah, if that vision, you know, if that vision was currently truth, a lot of pain would have been avoided over the course of the past few weeks. That's for sure. And I think it's a beautiful vision and you're doing it. I mean, you've got a rabid community. You've got a great team of really smart developers and businessmen alike. And I mean, you guys are doing it. So you're here. We're going to be here. We're going to survive this thing. And we'll say 5 years down the line, when the next bull market comes or whatever, we were here. We were talking about how we're going to, you know, continue to thrive no matter what.
And it will again. I mean, you guys obviously know the resilience of the space, and even if, you know, it is, again, it's just a wake up call, like get back to early principles and think about how to move forward. And this was a setback and a lesson for many, and, you know, including ourselves. And you just get back to grinding, and I think eventually you live in your new norm and move forward, and new opportunities start popping up and people start coming back out of the woodworks again. And it's
just takes time.
Just takes time. Like everything, just little, you know, like you said, a little kick in the nuts. And I don't know anything in the world that doesn't have it.
I was just saying, you know, this was sick, and you have such a domain of and a wealth of knowledge that we want to dive into, but we're running out of time. We want to bring you back on to talk trading strategies, to talk all sorts of different ideas. But for now, let's close things out with just one last question. You know, this is Crypto 101. A lot of new people in the audience watching the show. What's just one quick word of advice? We've obviously dropped a lot of stuff on their head today. But what's one way you'd like to close things out for a new person entering the space during maybe a very crazy time?
Yeah. Well, I will say, and again, not giving investment advice, I think historically this market is hyper cyclical and very reflexive, meaning that like lower prices tend to get lower prices, and higher prices tend to bring in more volume and more people, and numbers go up. I would spend some time educating yourself on, you know, take a DeFi first approach now and go to the basics first, and don't just make it about the chart. Like make it, I think we are really at a period where a lot of these primitives are becoming more and more meaningful. And even going outside of the Solana ecosystem, like into like things like Uniswap. And I mean, you know, I don't know about their token economics necessarily, but something like that has become a real, you know, it's become a real primitive in just the scope of crypto as a whole. And it's like having your exposure to the blue chips. And I think it's still early enough and it's a nascent enough industry that starting there and educating yourself, just educate yourself, understand what is happening and what is the difference between DeFi and CeFi. I think that's a big issue, that like FTX in my mind is not crypto,
right?
You know, Coinbase is not crypto. They're centralized exchanges, and you know, I can't speak one way or the other if, you know, about Coinbase. Like it's obviously been here a long time, and they're historically are great on ramps, but when you get into the ecosystem, like really focus on educating yourself. I think there's no time like the present to really educate yourself on what DeFi is and what the principles of it are and what tools have been created in the space to propel it forward and how it fits into, you know, what the next 5, 7, 10, 15 years look like, and take a long-term approach to it. Find things to get involved. And then the last thing I'll say is, when you get involved in these projects, like get into their communities and become a part of it. Like I have this kind of community capitalism thought around it, where, you know, you should, if you are participating in a community, you should figure out the ways that you can provide value to the community in a way that provides value to yourself and to the entirety of the ecosystem. And that may be in a, you know, in a derivatives protocol. It may be being a trader. It may, if you're an engineer, it might be committing, you know, committing engineering resources to the project. If you're just somebody that is like, you know, more of a passive participant, like get involved in their Discord channels and like help advocate for it, educate yourself on it. And I think when you really can capture that, like it allows you to be a part of something that's bigger than you. And crypto offers that. It's open. It's not like you have to go get a job at the foundation. Just become a part of the community. And like, I think that is kind of the future. It's definitely one lane of like how people make a living in the future. And also it allows you, there's a good human need of being a part of something larger than you. And you educate yourself, you become very knowledgeable on what it is that you're putting your funds into. And you maintain control of that. And like, that's something that's very powerful that I think this space offers that you really can't find anywhere else.
I truly could not have said it better myself. And that might've been one of the best answers we've had on the show for that particular question. I think that was right on the money. So Gunny, thanks for coming on. And we look forward to having you back on to talk more here in the near future. Hope you have a happy holiday.
Yeah, same to you. Anytime, guys. This was wonderful. Thanks a lot.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.